of the talk today is last night. I always try and just follow up on what we said before. Last night, that two questions which I remember was one, just can anybody get jhanas? Is it possible? And I said yes, and I'm going to explain why. And they also, can you explain metta meditation? And I'm going to answer both at the same time, which is called efficiency. We don't usually call it in Buddhism to killing two birds with one stone. That's really cool. So we change these similes to cutting two carrots with the same knife. So please never say to kill two birds with one stone. That's really nasty. And it's the other way, the other simile I really don't like, when they say, you give a person a fish and you feed them for one day, you teach a person to fish and they break their precepts for the rest of their life. So instead, you give a person a carrot, you feed them for one day, and you teach a person to grow a veggie garden, and then you feed them for the whole life. So you can change these old similes to make them much more compassionate Buddhist. But anyway, the loving kindness, and also why some people can get, well, everyone can get enlightened, and actually how it works. Another of those little similes. Now, first of all, tying it back to something which I have mentioned in the sutta class, second factor of the Eightfold Path, right motivation, coming from letting go, kindness and gentleness, that's really important, because you can't do one thing in your meditation, another thing in the Dhamma, they have to all come together. And for those of you who know some more about Buddhism, you know that this is the essence of karma. If it's good karma, it means it's good motivation. If it's bad karma, bad motivation. So there is something we call good meditation karma. So what karma you do now to get nice, blissful, deep, insightful meditation later? So the law of karma applies to your meditation as well. So if you do bad meditation karma, you get bad results afterwards. Good meditation karma, good results. So the good meditation karma is letting go, kindness and gentleness. That's good meditation karma. And striving, struggling, not wanting this, wanting that, that is unwholesome meditation karma, which is why we get stressed. And I defined that yesterday, the two types of meditation. Second Noble Truth, meditation where you want something, and Third Noble Truth, meditation where you let go. One leads to suffering, the other one leads to the end of suffering. So you understand why people suffer in meditation. It's not that some people can't do it, some people can. Some people just keep on struggling and trying. And of course, if they want something, they're going to get suffering. That's what the Buddha said. It's quite easy to understand. They make bad meditation karma, they're going to get bad results. Good meditation karma, Third Noble Truth, letting go, leads to the end of suffering. Good meditation karma means you're kind, you're letting go, you're gentle. Then that's going to lead to very, very deep meditations. So the only reason why people don't get into good meditation states like jhanas is because they forget the teachings, they forget the Dhamma. They try one thing for meditation, but it's not according to how the Buddha taught. So, how does that actually work in real life? Not just a theory. When you're sitting down here, it is the simile, and I find this simile really, really helpful for many people. It's a simile of the thousand petal lotus. Again, it's a famous simile which I developed. Many of you may have heard it before, but here it comes again. A lotus is closed up at night time. And if you look at a closed lotus, on the outside, the outermost sheath, the covering, the outermost, can't really call it a petal, is very thick, it's usually serrated, its colour is greyish, and it's usually got some dust on it. And it's never ever would anybody suspect that inside that outermost little bulb, when the lotus is closed up, can be some of the most beautiful and fragrant petals deep inside. On the outside it looks not promising at all. And of course you see we've got little lotus flowers all over the place here. It's a great symbol of Buddhism. You can see one of the ones which is closed up there. They've got a bit of colour on it, but it's hard. That's only a fake lotus, by the way. But you can understand that that's what a lotus is like. It's really hard and unpromising on the outside. It's got no smell either. Because that has to withstand the weather, the storms and the wind and the rain and the cold and the heat. But inside of every lotus is this beautiful, beautiful fragrant petals. And indeed, now we have in the Vajrayana tradition, and we share so much in all these traditions, Om Mani Padme Hum, and hopefully you all know what that means. People chant it all the time without knowing what it means. I know the joke is that Om Mani Padme my home. That is only the joke. The real meaning is Om, and Hum is just words like Namo. It just means like worship or homage. And the main words, Mani Padme, is the jewel in the heart of the lotus. So it's like homage to the jewel in the heart of the lotus. And this is what that means. Thousand petal lotus, in the middle is a real powerful, wonderful jewel. How do you get to it? How do you get to the inside of a lotus? So, in the early morning, when the sun rises, the warmth and the heat and the light of the sun hit the outermost petal, and it must be some sort of chemical reaction or something, but that opens up the outermost petal because of the light and the warmth of the sun. And once the outermost petal is opened up, then the light and warmth of the sun can reach the next layer of petals. And then they open up, and once they've opened up, now the warmth and light of the sun can get to the second layer of petals. So that's how it opens up. That petal has to receive the warmth and the light of the sun. When it does, it opens up slowly, revealing the layer of petals inside, so they can open up because they now can receive the warmth and light of the sun. That's how it opens up. And the deeper you go into the lotus, the more fragrant the perfume of the lotus petals is, more stronger, the more subtle those petals are, and the more beautiful they are. So, that is the simile of opening up a lotus. What does it mean for meditation? In meditation, the light of the sun stands for mindfulness. You're aware. And the warmth stands for kindness, compassion. Because those two, awareness and kindness, is what opens up your body and mind, your little lotus, to go deep, 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 deep within, to find out your jewel in the heart of your body and mind. So, that's precisely how we meditate. Somebody, when you ask me about metta-meditation, every meditation is loving-kindness meditation. You can't not have loving-kindness and get anywhere in meditation. You can't not have awareness and get somewhere in meditation. It is one of the reasons why Ajahn Brahm, why don't you teach us other types of meditation, just not your one, but some others, give a range. So I tell people, I usually start them off with breath meditation. And if they cannot do breath meditation, then I teach them Anapanasati. And if they can't do Anapanasati, I teach them loving kindness meditation. And if they find that difficult, I teach them metta meditation. And if they get frustrated at that, I teach them Vipassana meditation. If they can't do Vipassana, I teach them insight. And if they can't do insight, then I teach them breath meditation, by which time they've forgotten that that's where they started. The point is, they're all exactly the same. You cannot distinguish them. It's just different words. Although I do warn against when people just try and endure pain. When they just think of focusing on pain and they think they're going to get somewhere that way. Because we call that type of meditation anapana sati. Mindfulness along with pain. The Buddha taught anapana sati, but not anapana sati. You don't watch the pain. So, to give a simile of why they are all the same, the story of this couple, Sam and Vani. They were both into meditation, both really good Buddhists. And one day after lunch, Sam, his surname was Atta, Sam Atta and Vipassana. So Sam Atta and Vipassana, Sam and Vi, decided after lunch to go for a walk up Meditation Mountain. And they took their two dogs. One dog was called Metta, and the other one was called Anapana. So Sam, Vi, Metta and Anapana went for a walk up Meditation Mountain. Now Sam went up that mountain for the purpose of finding some peace and quiet. It was so peaceful up on top of Meditation Mountain. Which brings me to another little story which I put in one of those books recently. I'm just going off on a tangent. But I told this story over in New York and people loved it very much because they could really relate to it. I think you can relate to this in Hong Kong as well as in Jakarta. A woman came home one afternoon. She'd just been doing her shopping and had all these groceries, and as she opened the door of her house, a dog rushed right past her into her house. And she had her hands full, so she couldn't stop the dog. And so as soon as she could, she put the groceries down on the kitchen table and went searching, what is this dog coming into my house? And saw this little dog curled up in a corner fast asleep. It wasn't a stray dog, it had a collar on, it was clean, well fed. So it was a good dog, but what was it doing in her house? And it looked so cute, just not really harming anybody, just curled up in a corner, fast asleep. So she let it stay there. And 2 hours later, the dog woke up, and they were a very small little bark, so she opened the door and let it out. She didn't know why it came into her house, but the next day, the dog came back again about the same time. Came into her house, went into the corner, slept for a couple of hours, and went back again. Went out. And after 5 or 6 days of this dog, a very lovely dog, so that's why she didn't mind it coming into her house when I was asleep, because it's clean and well-behaved and lovable. After a few days, she started to get curious. Where does this dog come from? Why coming into my house? So she had a wonderful idea. She got out a piece of paper and wrote something like, I don't know who owns this dog. But it comes into my house every afternoon from about 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. and it goes into the corner, has a sleep. I don't mind it coming at all. It's a very lovely dog. But I just want to find out who owns it and why it comes here. And she, after writing the letter, she folded it up and she tucked it into the dog's collar. And off the dog went. The next day, when the dog came back for another snooze, it was a different piece of paper in the collar. It was the answer, the reply. And the reply read somewhere said, I'm the owner of the dog. I have a very, very talkative wife, 4 small children who make such a racket that the dog comes to your house to get some peace and quiet. Can I come too? Ha ha ha. You can understand why people in modern life it can be so noisy in the house. Imagine a poor dog with four small children playing with it, climbing all over it, and oh, that dog was very smart. The puzzle wanted to come as well, get away from the kids. But anyway, so Sam wanted a bit of peace and quiet, so he went up Meditation Mountain for the peace, the stillness. Just like any of you, in the evening time here, if people have gone to bed and they're not chatting, it's so quiet in Jhana Grove. It's much more quiet than any place I've been to in like Thailand or in Malaysia or Indonesia. There's so many people around. But here it's just it's hardly any noise at all. And also because the animals here, the animals don't make much noise either. They've not got cicadas. And so it's a very silent forest. So silence is just so refreshing and so therapeutic. So anyway, Sam went up there for the beautiful peace. But Vaj, he went up there for the view. Because you can see forever on top of Meditation Mountain, but even halfway up, she could see such a long way. She was taking photographs with her Canon camera. Now, not one of these iPhones, this was a professional, Insight camera woman. So she was taking amazing photographs. And as for the dog, Metta, dogs are so smart, they don't need a reason to go up Meditation Mountain, they just go up there for fun. So Metta the dog was wagging her tail, like dogs do when they're really happy. And Anapana, the other dog, was almost disappearing. Fading away halfway up Meditation Mountain. And when they got to the top of Meditation Mountain, it was so peaceful. So Sam was enjoying the very deep peace. But he also had a pair of eyes so he could also appreciate the amazing view. Because on top of Meditation Mountain, the insight and the stillness are there together. Same with Vi, she could appreciate the stillness, but she could also see forever up there. And Metta the dog was wagging her tail like it was going to fall off. Because on top of Meditation Mountain, it's not just insight, it's not just stillness, it's beautiful love, compassion, is up there as well. And that's one of the reasons why. If people come along and say they've had these amazing insights, they can understand the dependent origination, backwards, forwards and sideways as well, then if they have got no kindness, no love, sorry you haven't understood it. So those three live on top of Meditation Mountains. Deep love, compassion, peace and wisdom. What about Anapana, the breath, the dog? When you get up to the top of Meditation Mountain, your breath vanishes completely. That's why Anapana can't be found. As you go down, then Anapana comes back again. So that's my simile. They're all the same meditations. You just, we give them a different name. That's all. So, the Metta meditation and the opening of the lotus. You, that lotus, so what do you do? The light, the mindfulness, be aware of your body, first of all. That's the outermost petal, the sheath of your inner world. And you are kind to your body and mind. Which is what we got the teddy bears for, to try and encourage you to be a little bit kind. So, there you are. Being aware of your body and being kind to her. Poor body, sitting down here with a sore bottom, sore knees, sore back, sore head. Be kind. That's why many of the wisest meditators on this retreat are sitting on the chairs. You don't get more advantage by sitting on the floor. If you got a bad back or you got sore bottom, use some more cushions. Which is one of the reasons why, if you go on the internet now, meditation is so popular, so many people meditate, that you can get high-tech meditation cushions. The ones you've got on now have been around for 20, 30 years. They're so last century. So high-tech meditation cushions, they've got remote control. So if your bottom is sore, you can press a button and it inflates and if you're too cold, you can warm it up. Too hot, you can cool it down. Have you ever been to Japan or Korea and seen those toilets they have over there? The first time I went to Japan and saw one of those toilets, I was on there for about half an hour. Not because I needed to go, but I was playing around. You get the power of the jet of water and the heat of it. Because monks don't have much fun in their life. Like a little kid with a toy. And of course, I'm sure you've done this like I did this. You know, you don't sit on the seat, but you still press the button to see how far it goes. I did that. Made a mess of the toilet. But anyway, imagine that. So you get high-tech cushions, and you know, if your knees sore, it can go up this way and go up that way, so you can adjust it. So it's just nice for you. And if you do have sloth and torpor, you can press another button on the remote and a cup of coffee comes out. That hasn't been done yet, but there's an opportunity, a business opportunity. But the point is, you try and make your body comfortable. That's kindness, compassion. You're aware and kind. And the reason you do that is because with the awareness, the light of the sun, and the kindness, the body just really relaxes. It relaxes very deeply. So it's not a problem for you anymore. And then you can let the body go when it's not a problem. And then you can go into the inner world, which is the emotional world. And of course, that's where you come to all of your past and future, which is the next layer of petals. That past and future just dominate most of what we're aware of. Now thinking of what happened this morning, where you have to go this afternoon, what's going to happen next, what happened yesterday, last week. We're so obsessed with the past and future. So how can we go inside of it, just open it up like petals of a lotus, to see what's inside the past and the future. And of course that's the present moment. And I did mention this at the beginning of this retreat. How do you let go of the past and future and go into the present moment? With awareness and kindness. Your past, those petals of the past, you're aware of them and you're kind to them. You forgive them. Find some reason, some excuse to ask you to forgive and let go. And the classic story is the husband who had the afternoon off work. And his wife was making dinner. And his wife told the husband, "Darling, I've run out of eggs. I need some eggs. Would you mind going to the market and get me some eggs?" He said, "Certainly, darling, anything for you, I'm not doing anything." Especially when his dinner is concerned, it's really important, so yeah, you can get some eggs. So he said, "But darling, I've never been to the market before, give me instructions." So, the wife drew out a little map where the egg store was, gave him a basket and some money, and off he went to the market to get some eggs. Happily just walking there, no pressure, he got into the market. As soon as he got into the market, this young man came up to him, maybe about 18 or 19 years of age, and looked right in front of him and said, In all my life, I've never seen such an ugly face as yours. You are just so nasty to look at. You've got a face like a camel. The backside of a camel, that is, not even the front. You are just mega ugly. Your ugliness should be in the Guinness Book of Records. And as for your smell, you stink. I don't know what you've washed yourself with today, but it smells like dog poo. You're a dog poo ugly. And he went on like this again, and I can't continue like that because I'm a monk. And I am very sensitive. And I don't know these words. At least that's what I'm saying. But he was abused and scolded in public. And he hadn't done anything at all. He didn't even know that young man. Has that ever happened to you? Been told off and scolded and bad man said about you in front of others? Well, why me? I haven't done anything. But it's most people find it just so hard to endure being verbally abused by somebody. And he turned around and went back home. And when he came home, he slammed the door. And his wife said, "You're back early, darling." "Yeah, and I never want to go to that stupid market ever again. People are so uncivilized there, they're nasty there, they're terrible there. I don't know how anyone wants to go to that market. It's a terrible place, I hate it. Don't ever send me there again. It's a cool place, it's a terrible place. Bah, bah, bah." That's what people do when they get angry. They speak so loud and it makes no sense. But eventually the wife waited until he calmed down. And when he calmed down, he said, "What happened?" And he said about that young man who had abused him for no reason whatsoever. Said such nasty words about him, which was so untrue. And he got so upset, that's why he went back home. And his wife recognized this straight away. "Oh, it's him. That young man, when he was a small kid, he had an accident. He fell over and hit his head. He's brain damaged. That poor young man is crazy. Because of his brain damage, he will never go to school. He will never find a nice young lady to share his life with. He can never get a job. He just stays in the market most days. Sometimes he abuses me, sometimes he abuses other people, but we all know he's crazy, he's brain damaged. So we don't mind." And as soon as her husband understood that young man who called him all sorts of nasty names wasn't in his right mind, was crazy, was mad, was insane, all his anger disappeared. And as soon as it disappeared, his wife said to him, "Darling, I still need those eggs." At which point he said, "Certainly. Don't mind that crazy guy," he says, "I won't." So he went back to the market with the basket. The crazy young man came up to him again. "Hey, close your eyes, here comes camel face. Hold your nose, here comes dog poo." But it didn't matter this time. Because how can you get upset when you are being scolded and abused by someone who was brain damaged? He didn't mind at all. He had compassion for the poor young man. Brain damaged. So she went to the market, got the eggs, and walked out as peaceful as ever. Because how can you get upset by someone who's got brain damage? And the meaning of that story is this. If your wife comes home one day after work and she starts scolding you, no need to get upset. Just assume she's hit her head today. Or she's brain damaged. Because that's what we call getting angry. Temporary insanity. So don't get upset. "Why are you telling me this to me for? You shouldn't say this to me. I haven't done anything wrong." Of course you haven't done anything wrong. It's just sometimes that, you know, we get really upset. We get brain damage. So that's one example of the past. If anyone has cheated you, abused you, hit you, oh, there must be brain damage. Temporary insanity. They must have hit their head that day. So what that means is we can let it go when we are kind to the past. And when we're kind to the future as well. What will happen next? Who knows, but be kind to it. And then usually nice things happen. When you are kind and aware of the past and the future, then those petals open up and you go into the present moment. If you're angry at the past, if you're anxious about the future, which is anger in the future, of course it doesn't open up. No more than if you've got aches and pains in the body, you can't let the body go. Too much business to be done. But if you're kind for past and future, kindness and awareness, the warmth and light of the sun, then you go inside, into this present moment. You also have to, part of kindness is patience. If you want it to happen now, when you've got a couple of days late, left, I want it now, no. That's a total waste of time. Part of kindness is being patient. The petal will open, just give it time. So it opens, you get into this wonderful present moment, which is such a fragrant, beautiful layer of petals inside your body and mind. You're just here right now. No plans, no memories, just being here, enjoying every moment. And you can do that here. I've been advising you this a long time. And also that fellow Eckhart Tolle, what his name is, he made a fortune just on the power of now, present moment awareness. Just that much is enough. There's much more to it than that. That's a beautiful layer of petals, but much more. So you're in the present moment. Now what do? You're just aware and kind. Nothing else. Aware and kind. And then the present moment opens up. And inside, you know what the next layer of petals is? It's the breathing. It took me a long time to understand why was a breath meditation the most common form of meditation, the one which the Buddha practiced, why not other stuff? And it's because it's natural. Your mind, your brain as well, only notices things which change. And when everything else is relaxed, no past, no future, the body is relaxed. This is the last thing which is moving. The breathing. So you just notice the breath. That's always the way I practice. I never go looking for my breath. I just relax and be kind, be aware of this moment, whatever it is. And soon the present moment opens up and there you find your breath. Right in the middle of the present moment. So you don't get rid of something to go somewhere else. The next stage of meditation is always right in the center of the stage you're on now. You always go in, never on. It's not like going to university where you go through this course and then you go to the next level and the next level. You always go in this meditation. So you go in, and inside the breath, you're just watching the breath, you're just being aware and kind. Nothing else. And you start to notice more of the breath. It's what we said yesterday, the full awareness of the breathing from beginning to end. It's natural, it just happens. You don't make it happen, you're just aware and kind, and just the petals open up and you have full awareness of your breathing. And it's very, very pleasant. The equivalent in walking meditation, as I said, is a full awareness of the feet moving. And some people say, that must be so boring. But the truth of the matter is, it's not boring at all, that you can really get into that. Hopefully you've got some peace and some stillness, either to walk in meditation or sit in meditation, you get to this wonderful next stage, you're happy. Just happy being here with your breathing. Perfectly content. This is when that layer of petals opens up from the full awareness of the breath to breathing in and out, experiencing joy. Piti and sukha, they call it in Pali, but it's a waste of time trying to distinguish which one is piti, which one is sukha, because at these stages they always come together. It's just joy, happiness. So you're just enjoying yourself sitting here, just watching your breath, no effort at all. And it's a beautiful layer of petals, very fragrant. And that is what I call the pivot point of meditation, when you start getting joy in the meditation. Because when you have the happiness and joy, you can meditate for hours. Just like people can watch a concert for hours, a movie for hours. Not tiring at all, but just enjoying yourself. Beautiful peace and happiness. And that's when you find people meditating here with a big smile on their face. And it's lunchtime, 11 o'clock. And they know that if they carry on meditating, they'll miss their lunch. But if they go to lunch, they'll miss their meditation. And they carry on meditating. That's how enjoyable it can be, just even that stage. Yeah, who cares about eating? I'm going to meditate. And that's also just, I love telling these weird stories, these supernatural stories, about the Vietnamese monk. Can't say who he is, we don't tell people's names. In Sydney, when he was leading a 9-day retreat, starting on Friday evening, started with half an hour meditation and an hour Dhamma talk, and then people go to bed, get up in the morning, chanting, meditating, just similar schedule to here. But when everyone started the first half an hour meditation, and the monk was meditating too, when it got to 8 o'clock, the time to start the talk, the monk was still meditating. He hadn't moved. When it got to 9 o'clock, he was still meditating. He hadn't given a talk. And what did all the respectful lay meditators do? Did they wait for him to come out of meditation to give a talk? No way. They went to bed. They left him there in the hall by himself. And when they got up in the morning, he was still meditating. He hadn't moved all night. They went out to breakfast, he was still meditating there. The morning talk, still meditating. Lunch, he was still meditating. He didn't move for 8 days. No toilet break. No food. No water. Just sitting there like a Buddha statue for 8 days. That's pretty cool. That is what your kids is called awesome. You know what the word awesome is in Pali? I haven't told you this yet. The awesome in English translates in Pali as sadhu. So when you say sadhu, 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 that's what it means. Awesome. 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 That's what it means. It means awesome. That's a pretty good translation. So, he was there for 8 days. So that's what it happened. No effort. He actually apologized afterwards, saying, I'm terribly sorry. I just got into my meditation. It was so much bliss and fun. I just couldn't come out. 8 days. So if that happens to any of you, it's only about 3 or 4 days left of this retreat, so you go extra 4 days. But don't worry, if that happens to you, and you go an extra 4 days after the retreat finishes, I guarantee we won't charge you any extra. That'll be for free. On the house. Okay, Bert? You're on the house. Yeah. apart. That shows the joy and the happiness. No tension or stress there, you're just relaxed, enjoying yourself. So, anyway, so then you get the beautiful, delightful breath. Breathing in, whoa. Breathing out, whoa. They're very pleasurable, and that's the joyful breath. Yeah, that, and that's very nice petals. But as President Reagan said, you ain't seen nothing yet, because you're just with this delightful breath. And opens up. And inside that petal, you see what we call the nimittas. Beautiful lights in the mind. You can't make them happen. You're just kind and aware, and they will happen by themselves. It's amazing how many people get to nimitta stage and they think, I can't be, I'm imagining this, this is not real. Of course it's real. Just let it happen. But often they get either scared or excited there. Because you get into some very, very nice layer of petals and so beautiful, so delicious. Some people get scared. They don't have anything to be afraid of. It's always really, really good fun. Perfectly safe. And those, especially Indonesians, you are afraid, ah, spirits are going to come into me, I'm going to get possessed, I am going to go crazy. You think it's dangerous. So people asked me when I was in Toronto, is it dangerous to meditate? My answer was, it's much more dangerous not to meditate. And that's very true. There is no danger there, just have fun, that's all. Maybe you might miss lunch, but that's not really a danger, is it? So you're having beautiful lights in the mind, perfectly safe. And the lights which you see in the mind, they could be first of all complicated, which means your mind is complicated. I know this really well, so just all you need to do is to go for the most beautiful part of the most beautiful part of the most beautiful part. It might be a complicated, but just see which is the most beautiful part of that big image. Just go to the beautiful part. In the beautiful part, go to the most beautiful part, the most beautiful part. An example, years ago, I saw this nimitta of a beautiful field and a stream, a nice beautiful sunny day, and trees, and it was so lovely. Birds flitting through the trees, little butterflies fluttering through the trees. And so I went for one of the trees, just focused in on that. And that was very beautiful, but still complex. And I noticed on the tip of one of the leaves was a dewdrop, and it just sparkled in the sunshine. My mind went straight towards that, straight towards the most beautiful part, the most beautiful part. And of course that just came into this really beautiful, simple nimitta, like a sun, like a disc, incandescent, powerful, beautiful. With these nimittas, and don't think I'm going too far for you, many people get these. If it does come up, first of all, don't ever imagine you're going to go blind, because that's, it's brilliant, it's like looking at the sun. But your eyes are closed, you're not looking with your visual sense. It's a mental image, it can be as bright as it wants. And you never go blind. And sometimes it's just so incredibly delicious and gorgeous, so much pleasure. And happened to me, and recently about a year ago somebody came up, that was exactly the same words, they said, I had to stop, I don't think I can take so much pleasure. Something which I'll share with you. There's no limit to the amount of mental pleasure you can experience in the mind. Are you interested? Do you want to give it a go? Of course you do! So it's perfectly safe. So just allow it to happen. Piti Sukha gets incredibly strong. And Of course. No. What do you do next? Nothing. You're just kind, be aware. Go for the ride. And then, of course, the petals of the nimitta petals open up. And inside you get the jhanas. First jhana. Body totally gone. You can't feel the body at all. Somebody taps you, you won't be able to notice it. They will call you, lunchtime! And you won't be able to hear it. Five senses have stopped. And the sixth sense, the mind, just by itself, having a lot of fun. Very happy. Little by little, you go deeper into those jhanas. The locus opens up, deeper and deeper in. Until the last layer of jhanas, they call it neither perception nor non-perception. If you've read your books, when that opens up, there inside, the jewel in the heart of the lotus. You've gone to the very center of here, the heart, the essence. And you know what that jewel is? You know what it is? I'm not telling you. You have to find out for yourself. If I told you, you wouldn't believe me anyway. Would you believe me?
Yes.
That shows you're gullible. You can't just believe a fat monk. How do you know I'm telling the truth? Even if I told you, maybe just you'd misunderstand me. So do you just believe whatever people tell you?
No.
No, then it's a waste of time me telling you then, isn't it? So, there's nothing there anyway, it's just pure emptiness. Do you understand? No, you don't. Anyway. But that's how we meditate, which is open up the lotus and see what's inside it. That's why just that guy with tattoos. He had the most unexpected outermost feet, but inside the most amazing, beautiful petals. And I always use that simile when I go to prisons, meet murderers. Outside, it's really ugly outer sheaths. But I know that inside is these beautiful, fragrant petals if you go deep inside of them. And everyone's like that. Even good old Donald Trump. On the outside, you know, just really nasty person, lying and faking stuff. But inside, beautiful heart. Just need to open it up. You don't open a person up with negativity, with awareness and kindness. And it's wonderful to see people open up like that. And what was the most unlikely of persons becomes the most amazing monks, amazing nuns, great teachers. And if you know where they came from, wow, that's impossible, but it's true. You see that happen. Inside the most unlikely outermost sheath is the most beautiful petals. That's a beautiful simile, so I like that. So there we go. Any questions you can ask them this afternoon or this evening rather, but now it's 10 to 9, so it's meditation time. Opening up lotus time. And what I just said was kindness meditation. Awareness and kindness. See what happens. Okay, close your eyes, ready for takeoff. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have lift off. So what are you aware of right now? Be aware and be kind. That's all. Kindness and awareness. And of course, the first thing you are usually aware of is your body, sitting here. You're kind to your body, you're aware, you get feedback, you understand where kindness needs to be put, how you adjust this, how you relax that, out of kindness, awareness gives you feedback, so make sure you're going in a really good direction. a direction of peace and freedom and joy. That's all you do, just awareness and kindness. And little by little, you go inside. Layer after layer of you opens up. Once your body is really relaxed, I'm just rushing through, just because it's a guided meditation. You look at your mind and time, all your history, the struggles of your life, and all that's going to lie in front of you, which you can't really know for sure, but many, many things are going to happen. And you're kind, aware and kind to the past and the future. And that settles the past and the future down. You relax the past and future. So instead of being something sharp which keeps scratching you and hurting you, it becomes something really, really soft. Once it's soft, it's easy to let it go. You just go inside. Naturally, you don't force it. So the petals of time open up. You go into the present moment, which is way, way more beautiful than the past or the future. Just being here, being kind. Just commit to mindfulness and kindness. You'll be surprised after a while your awareness is on the breathing. And you never chose it. The breath came to you like the carrot comes towards a donkey. And when you allow the breath to come to you, it's always a much calmer, more delightful breath which you see at first. When you force your mind onto the breath, it's never as comfortable as when it comes to you.
Awesome.
Not quite the famous title, is it? Give it a try.